Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan here with us in Studio 3 to tackle the moral dilemmas of the day are Reverend Irene Monroe and Reverend Emmett Price. Irene Monroe is a syndicated religion columnist. Reverend Emmett Price is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Good to see you both.
Hey, thanks for having us back.
Glad to be here.
Well, we're going to start with your reaction to this Key and Peele Negro Town skit. I was both horrified and falling on the floor. We're going to pay people who haven't seen this, we're going to play some sound from it. It basically starts with this young guy walking through an alley, black guy, and he's not doing anything wrong, and the cop comes and arrests him. And then bangs his head horribly. He's getting into the car. And then all of a sudden, this person comes out of the shadows and says, "Oh, no, come with me, come with me." And then they jump through this window and open to the other side. It's like the Munchkin land, all this light. And then we pick up at the part right now. Here's the clip from Negro Town.
"Look at this place. Where are we?
Just be patient, and I'll show you.
Your suit change.
Follow me to a place I know, and there ain't no pain, ain't no sorrow. It's a place to be if your skin is brown. I'm talking about Negro Town.
Negro Town? What, like Atlanta?
Almost. Now be quiet while I sing.
Negro Town, you can walk the street without getting stopped, harassed, or beat. And there's always a cab when you need to get around.
And they always stop
in Negro Town."
You know, this is why, for those who don't know Key and Peele, obviously.
Oh, you gotta watch it.
Key and Peele from Comedy Central, Key and Peele from Fargo, two of the great bit characters in Fargo. And obviously, half of this duo was part of this brilliant White House press correspondence thing. You know, this is further proof to me when I watch this thing that humor does more to express a mess of a situation than all of the impassioned speeches by prosecutors and public officials. This sort of captures the essence. And by the way, the end of the whole thing, we should say, the end of the thing, he comes to back to his senses and he finds himself back where he was, rubbing his head. And he said,
yeah.
And the guy says, well, to the white cop, what happened? I thought I was going to Negro Town. And the white cop says, "You are going to Negro Town," which was like a great end of this thing. What'd you make of this thing, Emmett?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. I mean,
you didn't love it?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
I loved it.
I
why?
You know, as a piece of art, I appreciate it. I'm grateful. You know, it's great Afrofuturism, you know, within the
Afrofuturism.
Exactly.
Tradition, you know.
Okay, go ahead.
But it's kind of an existential dream sequence where, you know, the street person, Wally, is the conductor to the Underground Railroad, to this haven or heaven for black folks, right? And in a time such as this, I think it is funny, but it's funny in a separatist way, right? I don't think it's funny where white people and black people and other folks can actually have these kind of conversations about it. There's a, you know, prolific use of the N-word in there, and there's all kind of overly sensationalized, stereotypical things in there, some of which are actually funny in a slapstick way, but I don't think it brings together this notion of healing, and it certainly doesn't bring to this notion of reconciliation and race conversation.
But I don't think,
well, it surely doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think it does that. I think that what it was really trying to address, because this whole idea, And it is sort of sci-fi for me, a black utopia. So why would we need one? Simply because you have to address the whole notion of the debasement of black humanity, the utter indifference that, you know, we see towards black suffering, and the denial of black people to exist. One of the things that made me remember is that, you know, black bodies and black people in this country never had a free space to exist because we came here as chattel slavery. So I thought at one instance, looking at that, is that, yeah, what would that space look like to be someplace where we weren't, you know, policed?
And we
can
sing,
I disagree
so
with both of you?
Dance, right?
Yeah.
I don't agree with either of you. One, I love this thing. And I don't think the goal, first of all, I'm a huge believer that humor cracks open people's minds, not lectures about anything serious because it makes people uncomfortable. I don't think the purpose was to say, you know, we have to create a separate thing. I think the purpose was to ridicule the absurdity of the situation that only if they created something like Negro Town could blacks in this country have decent, free lives.
Humor is culturally based. I'll give you an example. For instance, a lot of white folks have watched Seinfeld. But you can do pretty much count on one hand how many of us watched, we meaning people of, you know, of African descent, not only watched it but understood it.
Did you watch Eddie Murphy when he did Whiteface on Saturday Night Live years and years ago?
Absolutely.
Do you remember that skit?
Yeah, I certainly
this
did.
Is a skit, and I thought that
you
did
thought
it was
reminiscent of that.
Totally.
See, I did.
Let me say what it was first. This is a situation where, as a black guy, Eddie Murphy goes onto a bus and people are singing and dancing or whatever. They stop as soon as he gets on. He goes out to a bank to get a loan. He's got all the credentials. The guy says, sorry, we can't do it. He puts on Whiteface. When he gets on the bus, everybody starts singing and dancing. He goes to goes to the loan thing. Wait a second. He goes to the loan thing. He's as a white guy, and he says, listen, I have no collateral. I don't own any property. I don't have a job. And the white guy, who's the loan officer, starts throwing money at him, saying, it doesn't matter. You don't think that made the
point? I thought it was a brilliant social commentary. Oh. And I think that what happens with this particular skit here is that while it's trying to bring the point across about the absurdity of race and policing, it still in many ways fall within a coon show. And so I think that when you have that coonish going on, you see that and it hides and if not completely obliterates the message.
Well, you know what I wonder? I wonder whether this is one of these things where white people see this one way and black people see this another way.
Of course.
Because it's insulting in many ways to African Americans. On the other hand, if you're a white person who holds all these under the surface kind of race things, to have people humorously talk about the fact, you don't want to pick me up in a cab, you know. You're a white woman. You're going to steal my husband. All these things that so it would work better, I think, for white people than for black people.
Well, I mean, yeah. I don't know who it works better for. I mean, it's kind of classic of Quincy Jones did a remake of The Wizard of Oz called The Wiz. And then you had the great movie Charlie and the Chocolate, Willy Wonka, right? Charlie and Chocolate Factory with the Oompa Loompas. So this is like the Oompa Loompas meet those people, those singing and dancing people from The Wiz, where you have all these great choreographed, motions. So when you do go to Negro Town, you'll have a whole lot of black people who are singing, who are dancing, who are shucking, who are driving, right? Or you go to the real Negro Town, which is jail.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is, too, I mean, it does depend on how you view this and how your relationship with race in America, because while some might laugh, it's quite sad indictment. And it really is quite sad, because what it's really saying is there really is no black utopia, no black free space for us to exist.
These jokes have been going on since the 20s, Amos and Andy, right, into Moms Mabley, into folks like Richard Pryor, which gets us to Eddie Murphy, which gets us to Dave Chappelle, which gets us to Key and Peele. And the fact that they're making jokes of the same stuff over the last century, that's an indictment on American society.
Maybe it's an indictment of American society, but which deserves to be indicted when you have a succession of blacks getting shot and killed, at least in some cases, completely unjustifiably since August of last year. What I think both of you at least aren't addressing, at least in my estimation, does it crack the mind open of the white person who is not willing to either to think about this issue? And to me, it absolutely – no one's watching this and saying – I hope – and saying to themselves, well, the only way we can do it, we have to have two segregated societies. We have to create a black coast and a white coast, and then everybody can live in peace.
Let me respond real quick.
Okay. Sure.
You're the first white person I've heard talk about it.
Yep.
So I wouldn't know the answer to your question. Well, and I think that's the point.
It makes a presupposition that this white person has a certain level of race consciousness to understand that this is a spoof and not something to entertain you by. So I think that, again, when we talk about humor, we always got to look at it within the context
of the consumer.
Like I said, I think this is seen by white people and black people differently.
Of course, I think it's that way. Yeah.
But on the other hand, gay rights is a bad example because gay rights has moved so much faster than women's rights or African-American rights or anything else. But I think one of the problems, if you are a straight white person, you think, well, a lot of people are going to think, oh, the black stuff isn't really my problem. I'm trying to get through the day and do what my – or the gay thing isn't really my problem. So when you have something humorous like this, it sort of clicks in your head and just gives you – I think, does crack things open a little bit.
I think it gives you a relief. I think it gives you a comic relief, because I think what happens is that we're all sort of, you know, balled up around race. So it relieves you at that moment.
Yeah.
But when you really, really sort of look at it and parse out what is it saying, it's a sad indictment. And in many ways, I would think that many African Americans would feel offended by it.
Yeah.
I like Key and Peele.
By the way, just
say
one second. It's not a sad indictment. The state of the world is a sad indictment.
So too is their comedy. And because I think, as much as I love these guys, I always feel that they are catering to a white audience at the expense of making fun of black folks. So I like them, but this is one of those skits that I found quite offensive.
Okay, let's move on. We're going to have no...
You know, now I've thought about it. I actually hated it. And now I'm reflecting on it. And I was appalled. I want to be on the record saying I was disgusted by the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about this sort of backlash that the prosecutor in Baltimore, Marilyn Mosby, is going under. She, of course, charged these police officers for the death of Freddie Gray, gets into the van, as everybody knows. He's healthy, gets out of the van, he's almost dead. Some terrible spinal injury happens. He was repeatedly asking for medical help. He didn't get it. I am a fan of hers, and I think that this is expected backlash. The kind of things that they're saying is she used inciting rhetoric when she was announcing the charges, talking about peace and justice. I guess they didn't like that. That she shouldn't have said the arrest of Mr. Gray was illegal because it's up in the air whether the knife he had was okay under state law but not okay under Baltimore or vice versa. And they're talking about how she's trying to help her husband, who's a city councilman down there, because, you know, a typical sexist, thing when you're going to be defined by your husband in a situation like this. But in any case, I see this as predictable backlash because that woman had incredible chutzpah.
There you go.
And that we should just discount this. But maybe I'm mistaken.
Well, I don't think we discount it, but I think we do. We knew it was coming. And we said last week when we had a conversation, I thought she was extremely courageous and somewhat naive. Right. Because there is this notion when you do step out there and you do make these indictments and make the statements that you make, you know that folks are coming back at you. So we were prepared for this. And in this stage, there's always these three areas. There's the policing piece. There's the politics piece. And there's the legal system piece. Right. And unfortunately, when you get to the legal system piece, I mean, it's all open. I mean, Pandora's box is open and these lawyers are going to come back with any and everything that they have.
It wasn't astute. It really was an astute move on many levels. One is
was
that,
or was not.
Was it was.
You mean the backlash?
No,
was
not the backlash. Oh. Her speaking up the way she did, and I'm surprised they didn't say she was shrill and strident and all this other stuff because she spoke, you know, in a very affirmative sort of tone here. I think the issue here is that how dare she? And I'm sure that the police feels like this. How dare she? In many ways. Hold them accountable to their action. And the one thing that she did say, in order to make this police force a better force, we have to hold accountable those who act out of protocol. So I think that she's not only doing that, but she's also, you know, pulling at politicians to, you know, listen, you too have been upholding this blue wall of silence. So I think in many ways she's been pulling their coattail. I think that she's been pulling the police, you know, force in terms of their over-policing of the community. And somebody has to stand for the community, and I think she did. The fact that her husband is a politician, to me, is really not the issue. It really isn't, because it works as a deterrent not to address the issue, which is that these people's constitutional rights have been violated for decades, long before this gentleman.
But wait a second. Also, wasn't she elected Baltimore State's attorney during the time in which her husband was a city councilor?
That's right.
So the people spoke on that issue.
Yeah.
The people decided it was perfectly fine to have the wife of a guy who represents us in one forum represent us in another forum.
And
so
that's
that
right.
issue
and that's his
is
district.
Total BS.
That's
no, I understand
right.
that.
Yeah,
I understand
right.
that.
And it's an indictment about the mayor, because the mayor is in cahoots with the police.
She's cooked. I mean, she is so cooked. And
you
she
think,
was a rise. Oh,
well,
yes.
I agree.
I
mean, I think what was so exciting is that here is someone who represents the system, because she is the state prosecutor.
That's right.
Who gets it. And was not seen to be in the tank with the cops. And so many other situations, we've talked about how, well, you can't have the prosecutor prosecutor because the prosecutor's in the cahoots with the police. So here's a woman who's brave enough when her mother, father, grandfather, aunts, and uncles are all mm-hmm. cops to get up there and say something. And I just...
Will you feel the same way if the charges don't hold?
To me, that matters, but this mattered more because she was saying that... We have heard you. We have looked at the evidence. The medical examiner says it's a murder. He gets into the car healthy. He gets out of the car almost dead. The timeline that was set forth of how this happened to this young man, I mean, was just so shocking. So if she had not filed charges, said we're going to charge these cops, she would have been just another in a long line of prosecutors.
Unless she didn't think that the facts merited charges.
Well, again, Jim, we've had this conversation before, but when you look at the facts that the medical examiner laid down, there was no doubt that they almost killed him. I mean,
look, if these charges don't stick.
I'm not arguing that there's no there. I'm just saying that's not an inconceivable outcome. But go ahead, Arvin,
I just think that if these charges don't stick, Baltimore and other urban cities need to be ready for what might be another L.A. riot, because this is the first time someone has actually spoken for the downtrodden, for the community. So I think that they will deliberate this case very carefully, because I think they understand what the reprisal will be should somebody not be indicted.
Well, the somebody maybe is the case. But the question, again, is will the charges stick against all six?
Probably,
and we'll see.
All won't stick. I mean, he may not get – the driver may not
second
wind
degree
up.
But she cast
yeah.
a wide enough
yeah,
net
she
that she can get
there'll
somebody.
There'll be a jury made up of peers in the community, and they'll listen to the facts. And I think maybe I'm crazy, but I think people are much more understanding about a acquittal after they've seen an right. open trial, which we presume will be on television. They can all watch it.
I think it's going to be a change of venue, though.
I
Marge.
Think so too.
It might very well be a I don't think it's going to. Yeah, okay.
But still, if you can see it, of course we can't see the Tsarnaev trial. But I don't know what the rules are.
This is state. This is state proceeding, so we would be able to see.
We'd be able to see. But let's remember that the legal process is not a popularity contest. And so there's going to be a whole lot of legal gymnastics that lay people are not going to understand. And I'm not sure that we're going to get the full outcome that we're looking for. And I think we need to be ready.
Okay, so it is Pope Watch time, you two.
Oh,
and
yes.
I've got very good news for today's brief discussion.
You do?
Here's the motto that I've always lived by. I really have. Marjorie's known. How long you know me? 17 years? You know I've always said this. If it's good enough for Raul Castro, it's good enough for Irene Monroe. That's my
That's right.
Now, and the reason I bring that up, you've heard me say that for years. I didn't even know you at the time that I first said that, Irene. Apparently, the Pope meets with Raul Castro, who you know is running Cuba, and he says he was so impressed with the Pope that he might go back to the church. Now, what do you think of that?
I think it's wonderful because he played a key role, in my opinion, of sort of ending the Cold War conflict. You know, he wrote
exactly.
He wrote a letter
to the Pope.
To,
that's right.
The Pope wrote a letter to Raul Castro as well as to Obama and said, "Boys, you need to fix this."
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, they did. And I think it's really wonderful because the Communist Party in Cuba has, for the most part, control religious activity. You know, in Cuba. So I think now that it's open to the world and he's allowing the Pope to come in, that there'll be exercises of religious freedom, and the Pope can certainly commune with the people. So I think it's really wonderful.
When was the last time you heard Raul Castro say?
I've never heard him say anything.
That Pope. I really like you. I really like you. And when you come to Cuba, I'm going to go to every mass that you lead.
But I'd like you too.
That's
if
powerful.
You end a Cold War. I mean, this is he's a powerful.
Well, whatever
man.
The reason
yeah.
is,
yeah.
it's a pretty good.
It's a good day for the Pope.
See, listen, you're getting me. See, this is the thing. You're getting me.
Irene
where
agrees.
Where I agree
I think we
on.
Should end it right here.
Yeah,
me
you're
probably.
You
have 15 more seconds. Don't put a damper on it. Otherwise,
don't put a damper on it.
She's heading that way, Jim.
Okay.
Cut it, Jim.
Okay.
Yeah,
gold star. I mean, gold star.
We wanted to touch all the surface stuff. We don't want to touch any of the sort
oh,
of
see, you let
hey,
it go.
Since you're a professor
stuff,
of music,
okay.
before you go away, we can play this in the background. What do you think of Prince's song, Bulmer?
Oh, I love it, man. Love it. I thought it was brilliant for him to be out there and to be amongst the
to
people.
To come back.
And you had all races, ethnicities, gender expressions. Yeah. I mean, everyone was there. It was phenomenal.
I love it, too.
Great day.
Let's listen to Prince as we say goodbye and tell you what's coming up. Good to see you both, gentlemen
okay.
and ladies.
Okay, we're going to say the name of the song, Jim?
Baltimore, I think that may be...
is that the name?
Isn't that what it's called, Baltimore? I think it's called Baltimore, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
I think it is,
okay.
yeah.
If people want to get it on their iPods. Reverend Irene Monroe and Reverend Emmett Price join us every Monday for All Revved Up. Irene is a syndicated religion columnist. Emmett is a professor of music at Northeastern University. Thank you both
Good
for
to see
being
you both.
Here. Coming up, we're asking you, do you have buyer's remorse or are you okay? The Plainridge Park Casino opens in a month. Will you go? Or rue the day you voted to bring casinos to Massachusetts. We could be drowning in them soon. We're asking you next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio. We'll be right back.